This is Bob Whitaker. The name of this program is The Untrained Eye. I'll repeat again why I call it The Untrained Eye. When the United States first sent a satellite around the Earth and made pictures, that was in the 1960s, the ambassador to Britain thought it would be fun to have the head of the British Flat Earth Society come over and look at the photographs of this round Earth. The head of the British Round Earth Society showed up, looked at the pictures, was very grateful, and he said, "It is amazing how, to the untrained eye, the Earth looks round." Well, that is the way most of the people who believe in political correctness look at the world. The rest of us see the real world. They have learned not to see the round Earth. They have trained eyes, and they see exactly what they want to see. Today's program is about how to use arguments, how to use time when you're making arguments. One thing that the left has going for them is that people against them, people against their present establishment, spend all of their time trying to look good to liberals or trying to deny charges like racism. In other words, most people today, when they argue with our enemies, will try to prove you're not a racist. You might try to prove that you really are a nice guy. Spend most of your time dealing with what the other side says. We are going to have to learn to use arguments exactly the same way they use arguments. That is to say, making our point. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. Now, a quick example of this is what's going on at the Air Force Academy, where a bunch of conservative Christians have formed their own group. They even have crosses on their wall and terrible things like that. Now, you can either talk about freedom of religion and sort of defensively say, well, they're not really being anti-Semitic and that sort of thing, or you can make our argument. You can make your point. The point that you need to make in dealing, for example, with this question of the Air Force Academy is to say that the problem that the establishment and this separation of church and state organization has with Christianity being not taught but simply being spread individually by cadets is not that the cadets are spreading religion, but that they're spreading the wrong religion. The point is that political correctness is a religion, and it is the only religion which is allowed on a campus. I like to start with the example that Buddhism has no God, yet Buddhism is a recognized religion. Political correctness has no God, but it is still a religion. If you can get the conversation off into that, that is much more important than sitting around debating whether people have the right to preach religion on campus and all the other stuff that conservatives talk about. The point is, you have made your own point, not their point. And it's not a point that anybody is waiting to deal with. You can go straight from there to, why is it a religion? Why is political correctness a religion? Well, it's based on faith. I wrote a whole book on that, Why Johnny Can't Think. You really ought to read it because it's short, and it goes into this point very specifically, that they are preaching a religion on campus. Now, isn't that a lot better if you get that point across when you're debating with somebody or even in a discussion? If you get off on that point, they end up on the defensive. They end up having to defend the idea that there's something to political correctness, that I'm paying for their religion being preached, the professor's religion anyway, being preached on campus. That's a lot better than sitting around like a respectable conservative and debating religious freedom. When I was a college professor, one of my main subjects that I had to teach was basic economics. Now, basic economics is about the most boring subject you can imagine. But it got worse because I would find myself teaching a basic economics class at 8 a.m. on Monday morning. The thing about Monday morning is that everybody in the class, including me, was trying to get over the weekend. You know, I'd spent the weekend on prayer meetings or something, or a few other things, and I was not feeling in top form. The students in the class, some of them looked like they needed to be in the emergency room instead of in a class. And here I was talking about the most boring subject in the world at 8 o'clock on Monday morning. I finally hit on a formula that was merciful to all of us. I told the class that if they listened to what I said, the class would last 25 minutes. I also told them that those students who did not listen were going to sit right in that class with me until the 50 minutes were over. In other words, I'm going to give a 25-minute lecture. I'm going to put the whole thing in that 25-minute lecture, and I'm going to watch them. And the ones who are listening could go home and pass out or whatever they desperately needed to do. I found out an interesting thing. On tests, I found that the material that I had covered on Monday was better remembered than the material I covered in 50 minutes in the other classes. That's because they were listening. If you can be sure the other person is listening to you, you're making a good use of time. The same thing is true when you're having a discussion with somebody. If you spend an hour talking about religious freedom or whatever it is that respectable conservatives talk about, the conversation might as well have taken place. And in fact, it would be better if you hadn't said anything, as I will explain in a few minutes. If you use the opportunity to say something new, to make a point, and you use your time efficiently, and don't just do like a respectable conservative, go ahead and repeat whatever it is that you're supposed to say, you're going to get some attention, and they're going to remember. Just wanted to finish up on this business of that 25-minute formula I found. The fact is that 25 minutes, if a class is offered the incentive of, this is going to be 25 minutes long, I'm going to tell you the whole thing, they will listen and they will learn. Now, you might think, well, that's interesting. Oh, Bob invented a new way of teaching. I'm sure they were very interested in that. Well, they weren't. That is, say the other professors weren't the least bit interested in it. In fact, if they didn't need an economics professor so bad at that point, I probably would have been dropped from the faculty, because the idea of a professor is to fill 50 minutes. The class is not what a professor is about. And again, here's a point that's worth making. A professor's job is to fill 50 minutes. A professor's job is to sign a piece of paper that says, the student took the course and got this grade. So we all know that the professor's job is to please other professors. If a person wants to get a PhD, he has to please professors. If he wants a job, who's going to hire him? Professors. If he wants promotion and tenure, he has to publish articles, publish or perish. Who is it who decides which of his articles gets published? Professors who run the journals. When the vote comes up, after usually 7 years, the professor has to try to get tenure. It's a vote of the professors. When he wants promotion, it's the professors, some professor, a dean or whatever, who decides whether he gets promotion. So the simple fact of the matter is that my great discovery, that if you can get your class to listen to you for 25 minutes, that they will actually hear what you're talking about and you can do the job of teaching, was of no interest whatsoever to any professor. And once again, this is not a bad point to make. Nobody's going to make it on national television or anything. And each program that I have presented here has given you a point which you could get into an argument or into a discussion of any kind if you're sitting there trying to make your own point. Now, let's contrast this to what normally happens with us, because we spend our time listening to respectable conservatives. On any television program, you got the same problem. The respectable conservative's job is to fill up a certain amount of time. an hour or however long with commercial breaks. The people who get hired to be respectable conservatives spend their time going over points that you probably by now, if you watch much television, could write yourself. A liberal talks about racism, the conservative tries to prove that he's more for intermarriage or immigration or whatever than the liberal is, that he's really a good guy, that he's not an extremist, and so forth and so on. The net result of this is that the respectable conservative is the best friend our enemies have. And the reason he's the best friend our enemies have is he makes the liberal sound legitimate. If the liberal is talking by himself and giving his editorial opinion, then it's pretty obvious that you're having something imposed on you. But if he brings in a, quote, conservative, unquote, and the conservative makes the usual harmless arguments and only responds to what the liberal is saying, he is presenting, as Jesse Jackson puts it, both sides. And you keep hearing that, both sides. It is enormously helpful to the other side. That is what we have to change. We have to spend any discussion time making points. Conservatives are good about not making points that make liberals uncomfortable. They're also good about getting off any point that makes liberals uncomfortable. This business of filling time and responding to liberal attacks and trying to look good to liberals constitutes the kind of person that liberals hire. If you're watching television or when you hear a political discussion, you're sitting there squirming in your seat saying, why doesn't he say so-and-so? Well, you have to learn to make the points that the respectful conservatives are not going to make. What we have on television and any other kind of political discussion today is a totalitarian system with a pretense of two sides. Now, we know that, but let's go down to the reason of this. The reason is because we do not make our points. So what you need to do is to stop doing what the respectable conservatives do. You need to use any discussion for making your point. For example, I just made the point that takes a little thinking now when I said political correctness is a religion. Now, point I made in the book, Why Johnny Can't Think It, readbob.com. I wish people would read it because it's a great primer for what I'm just now talking about. My point was that political correctness is not like a religion. That's the fatal word, like a religion. Political correctness is a religion. One of these days, if I make my point, some college or some private school is going to take that to court, and they might just win on it by proving that political correctness is not like a religion, because the court is not going to say you can't teach political correctness and suppress other religions because it's like a religion or it's being mean. But you can take it right under the First Amendment and say it is a religion. Now, there's a gigantic difference. I remember one person who read my book. He listened to me, looked me straight in the nose, listened to every word I said, and he wrote an article that said, Whitaker says that political correctness is like a religion. That made me a little ill. Another point I devoted a program to was that a living constitution is a dictatorship. A dictatorship is not one man with a German name who stands with a mustache. A dictatorship is one person or a group of people who dictate. You can make that point. You're never going to see any conservative make it because he won't be hired as a respectable conservative on television. So the whole point of any discussion on the internet, anywhere else, is for you to make your points. And the internet is breaking in to the media monopoly. The problem is, it's a new medium, but what we're going to have to do is not build this new medium on the old rules that respectable conservatives have. If you talk about Iraq, for example, you're not supposed to spend your time talking about how, goodness gracious, President Bush lied about this, or a bunch of mean people did something. That's great if you're a respectable conservative that doesn't attack anything basic, it's the sort of things in the paper and so forth. But what you have to do is to make the points about fact is we're in the Middle East for Israel, and that, for example, if the United States were to concentrate on making an alliance with Russia, we could get completely out of the Middle East. Let France take care of the Middle East where its oil supply is. But, of course, the reason we can't, as anybody who works in politics knows, is because the Israeli lobby is very strong and they don't want us out of the Middle East. The last thing in the world they want is not to be able to cover using our forces to protect Israel in the name of oil. In other words, this completely changes the argument that you're having. There is a solution here, but nobody's going to bring it up. Certainly no respectable conservative could get away with it, although George Will, one time, I remember back in the 80s, he was talking about the Jackson Democrats, the pro-defense Democrats, and he said, well, what they want is to be sure that the United States Armed Forces are strong enough to protect Israel. And I couldn't believe he's a very respectable conservative, but he did get away with that because the United States is actively in there to protect Israel. You can make the argument, you can get the argument off of oil, you can get it off of whether Bush is a sweet guy and all that stuff, which fascinates morons, but it's not for us. The only reason you use the news, and this is a term I like, use the news, is not to show people how much you read the paper or how much of the latest stuff you've heard, but to make your point. Once again, you and I, by now, could write what's called both sides in any discussion. Let's take a look now. If we're not respectable conservatives, and we're going into discussion, who are we? We are the new mainline point of view. That's why we don't have to spend all our time trying to deny we're this, or deny we're racist, deny we're anti-Semites, or try to prove we're good guys, or try to prove we're more for race mixing, or getting rid of the white race, which, by the way, as I've said, that's another point, every person who gets on the national media has to agree that we have to solve the race problem and have a multiracial society. But that race problem doesn't exist anywhere in the world except white majority countries. Nobody talks about solving the race problem in Asia or in Africa. All of this assimilation is the matter strictly of white countries. If Australia keeps out non-whites, that's racism. If Japan or Korea keeps out non-Orientals, doesn't open up its borders, they don't have a racial problem. Nobody talks about a racial problem in Japan or a racial problem in Korea. Africa could use an awful lot of skilled or hard-working people from abroad, but nobody insists that Africa bring in outsiders. No. The so-called race problem is the white problem. And we all know that if everybody said nobody else has to bring in another race, but we are going to have to bring in other races in Africa and integrate them to solve the race problem, just how long do you think it would be before the black people would say, that's a code word. When you say the race problem, you mean the black problem. And in fact, that's exactly what you would mean. Today, we have been beaten into a corner where we never make the point that this is genocide, that the race problem is code word for the white problem, that being anti-racist is a code term for being anti-white, because we're too busy denying that we're racist. So who are we if we're not respectable conservatives? We are a group of people who make points that frankly are in the back of the mind of an awful lot of people. I think the reason that George Will got away with that comment about the army has to be strong enough to protect Israel is because everybody knew it was true. And a lot of times, just by making the statement, you can get people to nodding, and more important, of course, you got the point out there, and you're talking about what we want to talk about. What happens is that we start talking, and the liberal is desperately trying to get off the point we're making. So if his hater business, accusing us of being haters or racists or isolationists or whatever, is working at the moment, then the other tactic they use is to get you off onto something to prove that what you know. Now, if you're making it very uncomfortable talking about Israel, then the other guy's going to say, well, Bush is a bad person or Bush is a good person or something. And then you have this desperate need to show, well, I know all about Bush. I got this very interesting dirt on Bush. I just got an email about Bush. Now, what you got to do is not follow whatever red herring they throw out. I'm sorry about that exciting email you heard last week, or you read last week, that you're just dying to tell him about. You're going to have to drop it. You're going to have to keep him on the point that you are making. I have told you before that I used to destroy people who said anything good about communists by repeating over and over and over, like a bulldog. I would say, if communism is okay, why is it that they all have to build walls around their countries and shoot people who try to escape? And the United States has to build walls around itself to keep people out. Well, the person desperately tries to get off on the unfairness of Western society or something or anything but the point I just made. I remember one time I said, for the 18th time, why is it that all communist countries have to shoot people who try to escape, and we have to keep walls to keep people out? That was the 18th time, and by that time, the audience was roaring with laughter about it. Poor fellow on the other side was in awe. But I stuck to my guns. He wanted me to talk about some other aspect of foreign policy or anything, but once I get you, once I get them, this is why they don't like to debate with me, once I get them, I'm going to make them answer me. I'm going to make my point over and over and over. When I find that I have made the other side uncomfortable and a point bothers them, I don't try to prove that I know a lot about other things. I make that point over and over and over. My job is to make my point. My job is not to show that I know the latest news. My job is not to prove that I know that government is mean or whatever else it is that seems exciting. My job is to take a point that hurts, take a point that's telling, and repeat it. And by the time I had repeated this thing, as I said, for the 18th time, and I mean I had repeated it 17 times, this poor fellow was trying desperately to get away from it, the audience was laughing at him. And I don't think anybody in that audience is ever going to forget the point that communism was a horrible failure because it had to shoot its people to keep them in. That's all you need to destroy a system. You don't need the latest emails. You don't need anything else. You need to make your point and repeat it. This is called, in politics, staying on message. The people who win their points, the people who make their points, stay on message. If you make the point about the Middle East, somebody is going to start saying, you're anti-Semitic. Now, you can either do what all of the professional conservatives do, and go into an instant grovel on the floor, probably a little bit of drool helps. Or you can say, I have a right to criticize Israel. Are you saying I don't? Another thing that people will say to you is racism. All right, now you can do one of two things when somebody accuses you of racism. You can either, once again, join the conservative gymnasts and hit the floor crawling, trying to say that you're not a racist and you've never been a racist and your daughter dates blacks and so forth and so on, or you can force them to define that word. And the reason you're doing that is not to win an argument, but to make a point, because you define racism. You say, do you mean that anybody, any white man who is worried about the disappearance of his race is a racist? And you stay on point. Get the other person to tell you what you're allowed to say. Put him on the defensive. Don't start groveling. Don't discuss their obsession. Don't discuss their labels. Because a respectable conservative who allows liberals to get away with the idea that having that tame conservative, gymnastic conservative, the guy who crawls around the floor, giving the liberals that weapon does us a lot more damage than if the liberals simply dominated the airwaves openly. You are not just missing making a point when you fall into this conservative line of answering liberal accusations, not making them define it. You are helping them. And it would be better if you didn't exist, frankly. It would be better if the liberal, if leftist ideas were the only ones allowed, because that would be obvious to everybody. I lived through a period when that was true, and it was much easier to argue then. Now, when I bring up the fact the media is essentially a two-headed beast, liberal and respectable conservative, which I wrote a book about in 1976, that makes it much harder to oppose than if they simply didn't exist. So if you get off the point, remember, you're not just missing an opportunity, you are aiding and abetting the enemy. If you're not a respectable conservative, who are you? You are part of the main line. Now, everybody knows that there's an inside the beltway world, as they call it, or an elite media world, and there's real people out there. And you can always say, now, I'm not saying anything right now that a lot of people aren't thinking. The question is, why won't you allow me to say it? Why are you shouting racist at me? What is this racist? What is a racist? You will never hear any conservative ask any liberal to define the word racist. You have to use that word, and not just to make him uncomfortable, but so you can make your point. Stay on message. Remember, we are telling the truth. This is a great weapon. And I'm not just talking idealism here, I'm talking about practical politics. I've been in the most practical politics there are. A liar has to have a very good memory. Whereas if you keep in mind the point you're trying to make and you practice it, you're going to find that this is not very difficult. What you're doing is expressing a mainline point of view. That's why the audience will begin to identify with you, and that's why these ideas, the left actually right now is scared to death, because they cannot believe that people are still falling for this nonsense. They're not going to help anybody who is going to be a real danger to them. But they are a very small group of people, and they know it. On top, the elite media, they have their little conservative sidekicks, John Hannity and O'Reilly and this crowd, who keep everything nicely within the allowed debate, the two-headed debate, the two-headed one-position debate that we have today. And it's very hard to make a point. And that's why it's so frustrating to me when somebody, after I have beaten myself half to death saying political correctness is a religion, is not like a religion, and then somebody leans back and says, well, Whitaker says it's like a religion, then you are worse than useless. I spent years fighting the idea of open borders, but the problem was what sounds like a very simple one. Conservatives would say there has to be free movement of goods, services, and labor. Now, the reason labor is not a good idea to move around all that much is because if Mexicans move into the United States, it makes the United States Mexico. The people make the country. There's nothing magic about a border. If the whole American population moved to India and the entire Indian population moved to America, America would be India. Let's make this very practical. Why do you invest your money? Why would you rather invest your money in Germany than in Senegal? It's because Germany is populated by Germans. You can trust them. You can't trust Senegal. That's an awful thing to say, but I guarantee you that when the stock market opens tomorrow, a lot of money is going to once again be saying exactly what I just said. Germany is made up of Germans. Senegal is made up of Senegalese. And people don't invest, and you have to charge a much higher interest rate to get somebody to invest in Senegal. It's not nice, but it's true. And that is what we are trying to say here. We're trying to tell the truth. And as I say, the statement I just made, you're not allowed to say it, but I guarantee it tomorrow, 1 million people are going to say it on the stock market. Now, you need to make that point of what a liberal would do is say, well, you're being a racist. And the conservative will then go into his gymnastic act, hit the floor on his stomach, and start trying to deny and talk about how he loves Senegal and all that stuff. What you have to do is return to common sense. Make your point. And this is another thing you have to do, is to get your point down to a simple point. I didn't come up with these overnight. It took me a long time to boil these points down. But I remember that I was known at the graduate school at the University of Virginia, one of the best in the country in economics. Every year, people would come in to cut the racists from Pontiac, South Carolina down, and I would take about 3 minutes to just tear them apart. When one professor started to argue with me, and another professor said, I wouldn't do that, he'll beat you. Because we both knew that the professor was going to come up with a bunch of stuff, and I was just going to talk about reality. When you say, here's another one that you should use, at the convention in New Orleans, I point out, let's stop talking about the white race. If you talk to a black guy and you say something bad about blacks, he doesn't say, oh, well, theoretically, the black race should not be spoken of in this manner. He says, why are you insulting my race? When you're talking to somebody about genocide, the word is my. You're destroying my race. Now, some people say, well, your race. Then I'll drop back on another point and I'll say, what if I say that I am as loyal to your country, the United States, as you are to my race? I was born white. These things put the other guy in one hell of a position, especially respectable conservatives, because they're going to say, well, your race, but they're going to expect you to be loyal to their country. And this takes some skill. You can screw it up, but we have to learn to do this. We have to learn to make our point. We have to make it succinctly. Leftism. What is leftism? Well, that's what my book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, is about. Leftism is the idea that professors should rule the world. In other words, the intellectuals should rule the world. Now, if you attack professors, they immediately talk about you being anti-intellectual. They mean that professors are the intellectuals, and then you find that all leftist ideas come down to intellectuals who plan the economy. Intellectuals should educate people. I love that word. Now, I don't know whether it's out of date, but there used to be a word called re-education. When people were brainwashed in Korean prison camps, it was called re-education. That's a good word to use. You can ask somebody, are you talking about education or are you talking about re-education, training? I'll tell you a good example of re-education. It's called sensitivity training. Someone is trained to be upset about the right things. That is what you do in re-education. And people always let the establishment get away with, well, we can solve this problem by education. Now, what if you said, don't you mean re-education, brainwashing? Well, this puts the onus on the other person. This makes your point. A major problem is not just responding to the other side in our arguments, but the fact that we're so obsessed with news because that's what we've always heard. Have a news hook. Well, a news hook is all right, but only if it helps you make your point. One thing I'm amused by, if you were today to try to discuss what everybody was frantically emailing each other about 3 months ago, people would wonder where you got it. Nobody remembers yesterday's news. So if you sit around proving that the Korean War was caused by the Bilderberger conspiracy, people are going to wonder what this Korean War is. But if you use that to prove that our general foreign policy has failed before, and it's failing right now, that's something else. Now, a general point I want to make here is, remember, when you are arguing, or at least when I'm arguing, I'm not arguing with the guy I'm talking to. I am trying to convince the audience. It's always easy to second-guess somebody, but when O'Reilly is jumping all over some right-winger, the right-winger should say something like, is this going to be a discussion or a bully session? That's simple. That's short. And if you say it about four times, you're going to make your point to the audience, even the ones who don't notice that he's being bullied. Now, a lot of times I will, it's a little hard to explain this, but I will use the word every this and every that, so that the other guy that I'm debating with can win the point. He can win his argument, but while he's busy winning his argument, the point I have made gets across. For example, I will say, all colored countries are poor. The other person will then jump in and, first of all, of course, scream racist at me, and I will say, I'm making an observation. What does racist mean? Does it mean that I'm saying what I see? If you see a brown country on television, you assume that poor children are going to be brown. And it looks like to me that the greatest indicator of the prosperity of a country is the color of the skin. It looks like to me that all of the brown countries are poor. And so I don't want the whole world to be brown. I don't want whites to disappear. And this guy is going to knock himself out to find an exception. But the point is, after he has knocked himself out to make that exception, what your audience is going to remember is not whether you won the point or not. The fact that brown countries are poor and uncreative is going to stick with them. So again, you need to make your point. Sometimes you need to lose the argument to make your point. Maybe he'll come up with a colored country. He'll probably talk about Japan or something. Not the mixed blood we're talking about, but what you have done is to swing the discussion over to race and put the other person in a very bad position. You may lose the argument, but you've made your point. Now let me wind this whole thing up with three magic words that you really need to introduce into every argument. Those words are, in your opinion. Every time a person says, that's racism, you need to say, that is racism in your opinion. When somebody says, we need to provide education, you have to make them say, you're talking about what, in your opinion, is education. When a person says, we must do what the Lord says to do, if you introduce the words, what you mean is, we have to do what, in your opinion, God wants us to do. Now, if you think about it, and if you use that some, you're going to find those three words will cripple the other side because they are saying, professors, educate, whereas religious people are spreading religion. You say, what you said was that professors provide what, in their opinion, is an education. It's like putting a block in front of them. It trips them up because then they're in the position of trying to prove why their professors' opinions constitute education. Then you can go straight into the political correctness is a religion. Don't let people get away with general words like education or racism or whatever. Throw in those three words, you're going to find out that you've just tripped the other side up. Well, that's what I got to say for today, and I appreciate you listening.